open the House Committee on Business and Labor, and I would like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 479A.
Mr. Chair, Committee Member, Senate Bill 479A establishes that the Public Contracting Code may not be construed to prohibit a contracting agency from giving preference and rewarding a public contract to a business enterprise that is either owned or controlled by a disabled veteran, and prohibits discrimination against a subcontractor that is owned or controlled by or that employs a disabled veteran. Declares emergency effect upon passage. The measure passed out unanimously from both the Business and Transportation Committee and the Senate floor.
Representative Barton, what a pleasant surprised to have you here this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Brent Barton. I represent House District 51. Senate Bill 479 is a fairly simple fix. Currently, Public Contracting Code authorizes, does not require, but authorizes agencies to engage in what the statute calls affirmative action, which is essentially contracting and subcontracting preferences for certain discrete groups that have historically been underrepresented in public contracting industries. This bill adds another class. To its current classes include such as, I believe, woman-owned businesses and also minority-owned businesses. This bill will add disabled veterans and disabled veteran-owned businesses to that class.
Any questions of the good representative?
Yes, does he know how to spell Schwarzenegger?
I'm confident he does. Anybody else? Representative Kanemer.
Just an aside that's not germane specifically to this is the new deployment for the National Guard is the largest in the state in the history of the state of Oregon since World War II, 2,700 people, 700 of which are from Clackamas County. As a point of information.
And Mr. Chair, I would
add, 45% of them currently do not have jobs.
I would add to that that actually this the idea for this bill came from a constituent of mine and Senator Metzger's.
Who is obviously from Clackamas County. As am I, as is the good representative from Kanemer from Canby. Any Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I haven't had time to really look through this bill real closely, so I would assume that the preference that is given to the disabled or the business enterprise, essentially, that's owned by the disabled veteran or controlled by it, is not requiring the agency to give that contract to the disabled veteran, but allows them to give the contract without consideration of other proposals?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holby, Mr. Representative, I believe you're probably more familiar with the Public Contracting Code than I, but it is my understanding, and perhaps others also more knowledgeable than I can supplement it if my understanding is faulty, that the underlying statute in this bill does not require actually anything so much as authorize preferential hiring practices to agencies on small, on relatively small contracts, I believe $50,000 or less. It what the preference might look like, I believe, is not specified in statute and is up to the specific agency.
Any further questions? I think it just reflects another good positive thing we're doing for veterans. We've watered down, diluted, and almost gotten rid of the GI Bill. It's no coincidence that after World War II, this country thrived because we did help veterans. We helped people, I think, in my opinion, a lot more than we are now. So I appreciate your coming, Representative, and sharing this with us. And if this is any further questions, I'm going to let you come back up here and work with us. Representative Matthews.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Your comment kind of brought me to this comment as well, and that is that we stand in this session, if successful, to pass the most comprehensive package for our veterans that we passed in what the Department of Veterans Affairs is saying, the most comprehensive package in 50 years. So there's still a lot of session left. There's still a lot of things coming forward, but we are hopefully going to be able to accomplish great things with our in-state tuition and those other things as well. So, and there'll also be a referral to the ballot where our folks can participate. So I understand your sentiments, but we have a great opportunity to flip that this time and continue momentum that's been built in the past on our veterans issues.
That's exactly right. Thank you. Any further questions? All right. Representative Witt, you ain't off the hook yet, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. just a comment that Following up on Representative Kenemer's comments, in the wake of the largest deployment that Oregon's seen since World War II, there are about a half a dozen communities around the state who are doing a Families Appreciation Night this evening. We're going to be doing one at Camp Rylea. And it's just going to be a fun night for all the families that are left behind, for soldiers who are going overseas to fight for the country. And we're going to have clowns. We're going to have a good time. We're going to have a good time for the kids that are left behind. We're going to plant a few memorial trees. And when it's all said and done, we're going to have a big feed for the whole community that's turning out for this. So if there's an event going on in a community near you, tonight's the night.
Mr. Chair and Representative Witt, it's a lot like this committee in that we have clowns and a good time.
Yeah, and honest pints.
However, it's actually a happy coincidence that we get to hear this bill on Military Families Appreciation Day.
Yep.
So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Barton, thank you for bringing this bill forward. And another event that's going to be happening, and I think it was testified to yesterday, is right here in the Capitol. May 21st, we're going to be packing a whole bunch of love boxes for our troops to send over there to a lot of Oregon soldiers that are there. So I just want to make sure all the committee members know about that. I think Representative Escobar sent out a challenge to all of us to help pack at least a couple of boxes each in our office. So,
and to sponsor two boxes.
Yeah.
$12
to get more information.
$24.
So it's good timing.
And I just pray they're all home soon.
Okay, anything else for the good representative?
Thank you, sir. Anyone else like to testify on Senate Bill 479A today? Seeing no one, I'm going to close a public hearing on 279A and open work session on the Senate Bill 479A.
Mr. Chair,
I saw him first.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Left four out for everybody. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 479A to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves Senate Bill 479A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. Representative Barton, would you like to carry this?
Nice. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Legislation? Thank you.
You know there will be questions.
Of course.
Yeah, why aren't we doing more?
I'm going to close the Senate work session on Senate Bill 479A and open a work session. Public hearing on Senate Bill 533.
Mr. Chair, Committee Member, Senate Bill 533 allows local governments to create separate provisions with greater penalties for retailers that are not complying with shopping cart regulations. The measure passed unanimously out of both the Senate Education and General Government Committee and the Senate floor.
If we could just get these shopping carts to return like this bill does, we wouldn't have much trouble.
This one's bad. I packed that bill on the House floor.
Mr. Miller, good morning. On that happy note.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Sean Miller, I'm here today on behalf of the Northwest Grocery Association in support of Senate Bill 533. The bill did pass the Senate unanimously. It's supported by not only the grocers but the legal Oregon cities. And it's just a technical fix on the bill that we passed last session, which I know went through this committee. You, Representative Esquivel, you did carry this on the floor last session. And it was driven by the neighborhood associations growing comfort of these carts being left in their neighborhoods. And although the stores do a very good job on their own to go out and get these carts, they're a very useful tool when you're shopping, but when they're in the neighborhood, they're an eyesore. And what we've decided to do, and several local governments were looking at their own local ordinance, we actually worked with cities like the city of Salem, Gresham, were the two in particular at the time, and kind of created a model ordinance, because what we wanted to do was create a public-private partnership throughout the state where we would make the investment of cart retrieval. We'd make some simple requirements in the statute, and then if a local government wanted to adopt a local ordinance on a cart retrieval ordinance, this is what they would follow, and there'd be some processes in place, sign requirements, a 1-800 number that we actually provide now think it's 1-800-CARTS, I believe, but it's a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week number you can call. If it's in your neighborhood, you can call that number. We have somebody traveling. We call them cart cowboys, and they come pick them up. I know Representative Witt knows a little bit about this as well. And so it's working very successfully. On the second page of my testimony, just to give an outline of how well this program's doing, since we started in 07, gives you the amount of phone calls that were put into the hotline, but it gives you the total carts retrieved. And we're talking almost, you could see, around 3,000 carts a month. Now, it's in the grocer's best interest to get their carts back when these things cost around $300 a month. So,
$300 a piece.
A piece. Yeah, so when they're off premises, and remember, when you take a cart, it's a crime. I mean, you're committing a crime, but it's one of those crimes that's never enforced. And, of course, the grocer's not enforcing trying to get go against their customers. And, therefore, this is we figured out the best way. It's most cost-effective for the grocers and stores with carts to put this system together. Now, getting back to the bill, all the bill does, very simply, on line 14 of the bill, it removes one letter, D, and just adds and just changes the verbiage of collection, a retrieval of abandoned shopping carts to a person who supplies shopping carts. All that D does in my testimony, I supplied the actual statute. All we did to what we put in the statute last session was you were indemnified from a stricter local ordinance. So going after a retailer, if you complied with these elements, again, the toll-free number, the sign requirements, and a cart retrieval service, and very simple requirements. And all we did last session was you were indemnified only if you had cart retrieval. So in essence, we created a loophole. If you don't have your carts with your store name, the phone number, which doesn't have to be the 1-800 number. In Albany, for instance, they have just the local number. So you can actually use the store if you want. Very flexible in that respect. But if that's not there, then you're not liable for a stricter ordinance, because when someone's out getting those carts, you don't know whose cart it is. And so, again, simple change. The cities who have it now adopted since then: Albany, Beaverton, Grants Pass, Milwaukee. But again, we are running this program in the entire Portland area. So since we've started this program, cities don't feel the need in the Portland area to actually adopt the ordinance, since we're already doing it. However, Gresham, Salem, Tigard, Carlton, Fairview are going to be adopting their ordinance. Again, Salem was the one who really started this because of the neighborhood associations. But as we got into it from our stores, it goes on in all these local governments. So any questions, Mr. Chair? I'm happy to answer.
Any question? Representative Witt.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, given the growing length of the third reading list, I was wondering if Mr. Miller could round up a few of those carts and rent them out for us to push our bills down to the House floor.
The good laborer always puts his load on wheels.
We can probably do
that. Matthews.
Would the relating clause allow us to have some sort of an alignment feature in there to require shopping carts to have alignment, perhaps? I'm just asking.
Mr. Chair, Representative Matthews, we do that so you can't actually take them.
So if you do that, okay. Thank you for your attention.
As long as we're on the topic of good ideas, perhaps we should have one that indemnifies damaged cars.
There you go.
Excellent. Great problem. In the last one week, person in Portland actually locked up their shopping cart at their place. There's a U-lock on it.
Clowns and cowboys. All right. Anything else for our friend Sean Miller today? Thank you. Thank you,
sir. How did you guys handle the lock?
Right.
How did you handle the lock? Your cart.
Actually, Mr. Chair, Representative Kennemer, the store owner had to come to the owner and ask him to remove it. It actually describes that in the Willamette Week. It's fine.
And God knows everything in there is true.
You know.
Any further questions of Mr. Miller? Very good. Anyone else like to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 533 today?
That sounds like YouTube.
All right. Seeing no one, I'm going to close public hearing on Senate Bill 533 and open work session on Senate Bill 533.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 533 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron, move Senate Bill 533 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Does this merit consent calendar members? It's unanimous.
I think so.
It's safe.
So be it. No opposition? Seeing none, so moved. Close the work session on Senate Bill 533 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 198A.
Mr. Chair, Committee Member Senate Bill 198A authorizes the Oregon Racing Commission without a prior hearing to either refuse or suspend or refuse to renew licenses issued to a multi-jurisdictional simulcast wagering hub upon finding that the licensee has placed customer money is at risk or has violated federal or Oregon law or commission or administrative rule. The original measure passed out of the Senate Business and Transportation Committee on a 4-1 vote and from the Senate floor with a 21-9 vote. Members, you have in front of you a -A4 amendment which changes the language of the measure but not its intent. The largest change in the amendment would allow the Racing Commission to suspend or refuse to renew the license without prior notification if the licensee has placed customer monies at risk and with at least 14 days notice if the licensee has committed the intentional violation of law or commission rules.
Thank you. We have Mr. Evers, Dudley, and Nyquist. Director, would you like to go first then?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Randy Evers. It's E, V as in Victor, E-R-S. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Racing Commission, and we are located in the State Office Building in Portland, Oregon.
I'm Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Chris Dudley. I reside in Marion County. I'm a member of the Oregon Racing Commission.
My name is Roger Nyquist. I represent TBG, which is the largest ADW in the state of Oregon at this time.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, Senate Bill 198 would authorize the Oregon Racing Commission to immediately suspend the license of a multi-jurisdictional hub in limited circumstances. The bill passed on the Senate side. TBG, who is our largest multi-jurisdictional hub, expressed some concerns. We have worked very closely with them. I think all of the concerns have now been addressed in the -A4 amendments. And with that, I would be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Was amended in the Senate, correct?
Correct.
Do you want to describe to us what happened there?
What happened in the on the Senate side was a concern expressed by TVG, and I'm going to ask Mr. Nyquist to clarify. Basically, they asked that we separate the immediate suspension into two categories. If there's a violation...
Director, wait a second. Give us the underlying bill briefly. And then
okay. Senate Bill 198 would give the Racing Commission the authority to immediately suspend a multi-jurisdictional hub in the event of a serious violation of statute or administrative rule. The solution we're seeking in Senate Bill 198 is to give us that authority. The Oregon Race Commission did have a circumstance about 1 year ago in which one of our multi-jurisdictional hubs had all of its assets seized by the federal government. We started receiving phone calls from account holders. These are players that are wagering on horse racing and greyhound racing through the Internet that they cannot receive their monies. We have a rule that says that any account holder, if they request their monies to be returned, receive those monies in 5 business days. And because the assets were seized, the monies could not be refunded by the multi-jurisdictional hub. We talked to our Attorney General's office. They said our only option is... Yes,
Representative. What's a multi-jurisdictional hub? You got to back up a little bit
okay.
here. I don't know this language that you're talking about. So.
I'll describe our operation to you. I think it's the easiest way to do it. We are, for lack of a better term, the ESPN of horse racing. If you have expanded cable, we would be channel 408 or 409, depending on where you live. We have a horse race telecast from somewhere in the country every 10 to 15 minutes. Customers can wager on those races through a couple of different forms. The most common is through our website. All of those wagers are routed through our hub operation in Beaverton, where we employ about 30 to 40 people.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Thank you. Go ahead.
The situation I was describing, we talked to the Attorney General's office. They informed us that under the current law, our only option was to issue a notice of intent to suspend the license. That process could take anywhere from 8 months to a year to be corrected or rectified. In the meantime, players could be depositing additional monies. New accounts could be open. The commission was concerned that one of our highest priorities is protecting the integrity of the sport, both the equine and human athletes, and the integrity of the wagering system. And so not to be able to protect the players' accounts was a concern to the Oregon Racing Commission. The solution in Senate Bill 198 would give us the authority in very limited circumstances to immediately suspend the license of a multi-jurisdictional hub. I do want to add one other point. One of the last things the commission wants to do is suspend a license of a multi-jurisdictional hub. When they're operating, they pay us $200 a day, which helps pay for the Oregon Race Commission budget. They also pay hub taxes, which go to benefit racing in the state of Oregon. So we are delighted to have 11 multi-jurisdictional hubs in the state. They really benefit and support horse racing in the state. To suspend the license would be a very judicious and well thought out manner by the five racing commissioners appointed by the governor.
That being said, there's a lot of money at play here. And I have the benefit of hearing your budget in the subcommittee I sit on. How much money are we talking about here in Oregon, and what's the state's cut of the action?
For the 2009-2011 biennium, there will be approximately $2 billion wagered through the multi-jurisdictional hubs. The hubs pay what's called a hub tax. That will be approximately $4.2 million for the 2009-2011 biennium. Two-thirds of that stays in racing to benefit racing in the state of Oregon. One-third is deposited in the state general fund. So about $1.4 million will go to the state general fund next biennium.
Any questions of these good gentlemen? Representative Thatcher, please.
I'm reading Section 2, and it just says that the commission may suspend a license or refuse or to renew or whatever without hearing if the commission finds that the licensee has committed a violation of federal or Oregon law. According to who? An opinion that it looks like they're violating the law, or have they gone through the process and it's been found that they absolutely have violated the law?
Chair Schaffler, Representative Thatcher, I think probably the example that we had a year ago was probably the classic, where there was no doubt that the players were not able to get their monies returned to them. We actually talked to the multi-jurisdictional hub, and they admitted that they could not return the money. So I think that's probably the best example, and that's why we've split the two situations. If there's a violation of law and players' money is at risk, that's when we can move to an immediate suspension. If there's a violation of law and there is not a risk of players' money, there's no imminent threat to the player accounts, then now we're under the Dash 4 amendments, we're required to give them notice. They have 14 days to correct the situation, and if they do that, there would be no suspension. So I think our concern is protecting the player accounts. There's a lot of money on deposit, and the commission would like the authority to take immediate action in that situation.
Follow up. I guess what I'm getting at is you all are probably a great bunch of folks that want to be judicious, saying we get a new group of people in the commission. Can they go on a witch hunt, you know, essentially? Can they use this law to back up their shutting down that person over there because they don't like
him? Mr. Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thatcher, it would take a collusion of a majority of five gubernatorially appointed commissioners to want to be bad actors. And then there's the other issue of if you take action and suspend, then you've stopped the movement of those revenues, and it's not in our own self-interest to do that. So I think we'd be very careful in our fact-finding before we would take action. As Mr. Evers pointed out earlier, we had good information last time, and we tried to act and could not without probably a 6-month wait, which defeats the purpose of trying to regulate. And we would use this judiciously. I assume there would be significant feedback and backlash if you use this authority without being very careful about it, and somebody else would be back here before you pretty quickly to get that reversed. So I know that's not a problem with the current commission. I don't think that would be a problem with future commissions.
And they may be hunting you.
Absolutely.
You know, one thing about money, I mean, we have the Treasurer's Office, the Secret Service, bank, pension, all kinds of regulators that can literally come in and seize assets on the suspicion of wrongdoing with money. And I think that's exactly, and I know they do not do that lightly, ever. And the folks that are appointed to these boards, they just don't go out on the street and drag people off and say, we're going to put, you have life histories and work history that makes you appropriate appointment to that, and you do not do this kind of, take this kind of, it's the first question I asked too, without a hearing. It just jumps off the page at you. But, you know, the scenario that's been explained to me, clearly they were exactly right and needed to move in a more timely fashion than literally the statute allowed. The federal government stepped in. Isn't that not correct?
Chair Schauffele, that is correct. The federal government stepped in and seized all of their assets.
Right. All right. Representative Barton, please. Oh, Mr. Nyquist, do you want to respond to that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thatcher, we, TVG, shared your concern in the original version of the bill, narrowing the immediate suspension to player funds. We're comfortable with. There's somewhat of a balancing act there, and that we, TVG, don't want anything to happen that would undermine the integrity of a license. And if customers were to lose funds with another operation, that would impact on the whole industry. So there's a balance there, if you will, and we're comfortable that the proposal before you strikes that balance.
Representative Barton, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A comment and then a question, if I may. This bill, I mean, we're changing the procedure in which a license could be revoked under certain circumstances, but that would not deprive anyone of procedural due process, and in some cases, substantive due process. So I think the threat of a witch hunt, although always conceivable in any human institution, is not necessarily as acute as it might seem at first. But my question is actually going back to Chair Schauffele's question regarding the finances, and I recognize this is not a Ways and Means Subcommittee, this is not a budgetary hearing, but just let's assume, you said that there's about $2 billion annually in Oregon. Did I hear that correct?
Chair Schauffele, Representative Barton, I was referring to the biennium, so a little over $2 billion in the 2009-2011 okay. Biennium is our projection.
Okay, and with about 4.2, so by my, let's assuming $2 billion is exactly right, I know it's a rough number, but so that's, the government would get 0.21% of the amount of wages. Now, I'm wondering what the net is. I recognize, for example, perhaps it's a parimutuel bet, in which case, actually, that 0.21% is actually a fairly high percentage of the actual, shall we say, profit at issue. Can you walk me through those numbers briefly, sort of back of the napkin sketch?
I can take a stab at that. Of the $4 billion, between 80% and 85% of it is returned to the customers, and so that's the lion's share of it. And then the horsemen in the track get a portion of it. The hub keeps a portion of it for operations, and then you have all of the other expenses. This at this point in time is a highly competitive business. Oregon has the majority of the business in the country right now because, one, they were the first to envision it and pass laws that allowed it. The second is the Oregon Racing Commission over the last 10 years has done a great job in being business friendly and working with folks, and I think the legislation you have before you is a good example of that. So it's like any other tax rate. You can start moving it around, but you move it up a quarter of a point, and 0.5% of zero is much less than 0.25% of $4
billion. Mr. Evers, why don't you just have your staff roughly break it down on a page and share it with us?
Chair Schauffele would be happy to do
you
that.
You don't need to share the whole budget, which isn't a very flat budget,
thank you
might add.
Representative Esposito.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, but there's a missing piece here because any business that makes money has to pay a corporate tax themselves if they make a net profit, so that would not be part of this picture because you have no idea what these people are making.
Chair Schauffele, Representative Esposito, before I had the pleasure of coming to the Racing Commission, I spent 29 years at the Oregon Department of Revenue, managed the income tax program, corporate excise tax.
Then again, you might know a little bit about that.
You're absolutely correct. In addition to the hub taxes that these companies pay, they're subject to property taxes for property they own.
That's right.
They're subject to corporate excise taxes for any profits that they make at the corporate level. So they are good corporate citizens. They pay taxes and contribute to society in a variety of ways, in addition to the hub taxes that they pay to benefit racing and to help support the general fund.
And if everything works out right, if they don't comply with our tax code, they're not going to get their business license renewed. Any further questions of these good people? Representative Matthews.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to double check. So at this point, you're all three in favor of the Dash 4 amendment that comes before us. Is that right, TBG?
Yes, we are.
You're settled on that. And so at this point, we have no known opposition any longer on this bill. You look for the amendments after the Senate. It would be up to us to amend the bill that they had already amended to get to where we need to be for you to be satisfied.
That's right.
Thank you.
Representative Thatcher.
I still have a little discomfort here. In you're saying, or you're focusing on Section 2, Sub A, where it says if they, you know, well, they basically they won't get their license renewed, or they can be suspended if they've committed a violation of federal or Oregon law or commission rules that have placed monies, you know, public monies at risk. Or
I don't know.
B, which involves an intentional violation, but. Intentional to who?
I think of
law, federal law, Oregon law, or rule. And that tax just
gives
me a little...
Are you reading from the Dash 4s?
No.
I'm looking at A engrossed from the Senate bill.
This is their new amendment.
Sorry. See, thank you for clarifying that.
Thatcher,
okay.
I'm with you completely, and that's why I expressed concern on the Senate.
Thank you. Thank you. Gotcha. Okay.
That's
thank you for getting me on the right page. I was looking at the wrong page.
I confess, I wasn't aware that the amendment wasn't in there yet either, but I learned that this morning.
Yeah.
Any further questions? Representative, are you satisfied with that, Representative?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to thank you and your staff for working with us and taking a stab a number of times at amendments to make this work in
right
a timely manner.
You're very welcome.
It.
It's a lot better.
Any further questions before we move on? All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 198A this morning? Seeing no one. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 7.
Can't do the work session.
A public hearing, pardon me?
Mr. Chair, I just want to point out that we received the Dash A4 amendment late yesterday and has not been fully vetted, and the paperwork for fiscal and revenue has not been returned. So I can schedule a work session next week.
All right,
if
very
you
good.
Wish on that. So.
That would be good, and that would give everybody a longer time to take a good look at it. All right. Senator is not here, so we're just moving on.
Do you want to carry that over, then?
You want to wait until...
Do you want to be at ease while I can check it with
yes,
his office?
Yes, that'd
okay.
be great.
Okay.
Which senator is it?
Atkinson.
We're going to see if Senator Atkinson is available. nothing, we adjourn.